Three crucified, two of them children, whose frail little bodies looked no more than 6 years of age. And one corpse was just charred remnants, smoldering in glowing metal links at the center of a heap of ashes. It took close to 2 hours for them to finally reach the massive Villa Front Royal, and when they did, Christie stared out in disbelief. The bill was just about the biggest building she'd ever seen in her entire life. It was like pictures of medieval castles in the old book she'd read as a child in Harmony. The brick was weathered to a glorious golden hue that shone even on such a dull morning. The windows were mainly narrow slits, as in most armored wags, but high up on one wall was an arched window that looked as if it were made of colored glass. There was a wide river around the outside, with only a single bridge that crossed it, which could be raised or lowered on chains from inside the bill. Through the archway, under a spiked gateway, Christie could make out a central courtyard where armed men patrolled. For at least 200 yards on all sides of the squat building, the trees and bushes had been hacked down to prevent them being used as cover by any would-be attackers. She realized then why the Cotters had been able to control so much of the Shens for so many years. With 100 armed sec men and a bill of this strength, it was impossible to conceive of the Baron ever being humbled. Christie began to feel very frightened. As soon as the wagons had rattled over the cobblestones of the bridge across the sedge-crusted moat, they reined in to a halt. The four friends were hustled with an over-firm politeness through a studded doorway, along a narrow corridor, past other guards, and into a large chamber. The big sergeant pointed at another door.
One at a time into there. Everything off. There's a bolt on the inside in case you worry about your privacy or whatever. There's clothes and boots on racks on the walls, all sizes. Leave everything there. It'll be boxed up and kept for if... for when you get out of the vill.
Blasters?
Watch my lips, short ass. Everything. Know what that means? It means everything. Far side, there's another door. Go through it and wait. Don't try to fuck off anywhere else. You'll be watched. And don't forget to unbolt this door before you go on through. You read me?
He glowered at JB. The armorer was never one to be faced down, even when he was at least a foot and a half shorter than the sergeant.
Sure you don't want us to unhook our balls in there so we could all be the same?
The sec man stared, stony-eyed for a moment, then nodded.
Maybe that old coot back in Shuresville had something, little man. Maybe you're more than... Well, maybe we'll talk after the Baron and the lady have spoken to you. I hope so. That jest of yours could turn sour.
He looked at the others.
Now, who goes first?
Me.
Ryan pushed the door shut behind him, not bothering to slide the heavy iron bolt. If the sec man wanted to get in at him, a single bolt wasn't going to hold them off, and the far door had no lock anyway. But to make up for that, the farther doorway was encircled by what he recognized as a sophisticated metal detector in top condition. The only better one he'd ever seen had been at a double-class gaudy house down in New Orleans years ago. Sets of clothes lined the wall, looking like sucked-out corpses, and were in the familiar dark color that was worn by most of the interior servants of Front Royalville. They had a strip of black on the lapels, with a neat red star that showed they were guests. Ryan's mind raced with what was happening. The last time he'd seen his brother Harvey, it had been through a welter of streaming blood. The air had been filled with murder. Now, after so many years, he was about to meet up with Harvey Carter once more. If Harvey recognized Ryan as his missing brother, then death would follow as surely as night followed day. But would he recognize Ryan? That was the question that occupied Ryan as he pulled off his steel toe-capped boots and replaced them with the soft leather ankle boots. He placed all of his clothes in a large canvas bag, putting his weapons on top of it, the long panga and the slim-bladed flensing knife with the 9mm 6-hour on the very top. He tried to recall what this part of the ville had been used for when he'd been there, but time had blurred the edges of his memory. Some kind of storeroom, he thought.
Rutabagas.
He remembered now that there had been a great dump of yellow turnips in the room. They'd been piled high in the corner where the boots were stacked near the farther door. He'd used it when playing hide-and-seek with Morgan, when he'd been about 9 years old. He'd carved his name with a battered horn-hafted knife on the side of the door. Ryan went and peered to examine the frame, but it had been rebuilt and painted several times, and there was no sign of his initials. Dressed and ready, he now had to go and face the next room in the Ville, and hazard the chance of being recognized by his brother. Ryan took a deep breath and pushed the door open. The chamber beyond was dimly lit, and he blinked into the darkness. A voice bubbled out from above and behind him.
Welcome to Front Royal, brother.
Brother? He knew. Harvey Carter knew, had known all along. Someone had recognized Ryan, had spotted the blind eye and the torn face and put two and two together. It had all been a setup to take him off balance, to get his weapons away without a fuss. The gentle approach. Ryan winced, waiting for the crushing impact of a .45 caliber bullet between his shoulder blades. Or would it be slower?
For any man that comes to our home is surely our brother, is he not? Or our sister. If he's a woman, she is. Then she is not our brother, but our sister. Then our sister and our brother are all men and women who visit us.
Ryan turned around slowly, fighting for control, as he realized he was not down and doomed. Not yet. His eye was quickly becoming accustomed to the smoky half-light, which was generated by flaming torches placed in wall sconces around the room. There was a balcony that ran clear around the second floor level. This had been a small dining room when Ryan had been a child, and there had been music. Mandolin, dulcimer, and banjo played from the balcony. Now, Harvey Carter, Baron of the Ville, stood there with his woman at his side.
We welcome you, Master Thursby, to Front Royal. You will understand that we must take precautions against them that trespass against us. You saw our crop of flowering trees as you came here, Master Thursby.
Ryan made a half bow to the shadowy figure.
Yes, Baron.
Good, good. You see, dearest, here is a man of culture and understanding who will be welcome. Not some ragged and double poor fucking bastard who would covet everything I own.
Ryan took a deep breath. Ryan began to realize that his older brother might well be full crazy.
Where are the other visitors, brother? Brother Thursby?
At that moment, the door opened again, and Christy Roth came in, wearing a dark blue blouse and knee-length skirt of the same Front Royal livery. Her ankle boots were of plain untanned leather with a low stacked heel. She'd used a piece of thin cord to tie back her cascade of hair. Even in the poor light of the vaulted room, it still blazed like a coronet of living fire.
Brother, welcome. Sister. Sister, welcome. Is she...
Step to one side, Harvey.
The bulky figure of the man shifted sideways a few steps until it stood directly beneath one of the torches. Then, at long last, Ryan was able to properly see his brother. He had the same clumsy, shuffling, crab-like walk with the right leg trailing and the right shoulder lifted in an unsightly hump. His face was partly in shadow, but Ryan could detect that there was some malformation of the mouth and nose. After so many years, it gave him a thrill of vicious pleasure to see that his parting punch into his brother's hooked nose had been so brutally successful. But above all of this was the astonishing way that Harvey Carter had grown grotesquely fat. Not plump, not just obese, but grossly, obscenely fat. He wore a flowing gown, like a cerise bedsheet, but it couldn't conceal his size. A quick guess put him around the 350-pound mark. His clothes were covered in delicate filigree embroidery, in woven patterns of silver and gold. His chubby hands were smothered in rings, one with what looked like a human eye, set in a stone of amber. With an infinite grace that caught Ryan's attention, Lady Rachel moved to stand near the Lord of the Ville. Her face turned away from the light to peer down into the gloomy cavern of the hall at the man and the woman. She was taller than Harvey Carter, slim and elegant, wearing a gown that looked like black velvet, soft as sin. Her hair was cropped to her narrow shoulders, dark and lustrous. Her cheeks were very pale, and her eyes had vanished like gemstones of midnight jet in the hollows of their sockets. She wore no facial makeup, and her fingers were long and strong, without any jewelry.
Is the woman Mutie?
No, she's not, Lady Rachel.
Christy startled Ryan as he felt her voice wash over him like a breath of fresh air. Only then did he realize that the room carried the scent of some floral incense. One of his father's serving women had used something like it. The odor was clinging and sickly sweet, like the rotting meat that attracts the most beautiful of butterflies.
Where are the others of your party, Master Thursby?
There are two more men, and then two more that have fled our hospitality into the unfriendly Shens.
True, my lady. Dr. Theophilus Tanner and his... and Laurie Quint. I am Foy Thursby, as you know, and this is Christy Roth from the Vale of Harmony. This is Jack Lauren from the far south of the Deathlands.
Azrael, his hair husband!
Muti! A Muti here in the heart of my field! Take him, guards! Slit his throat and in the boar pit for my precious pets!
He is not a Muti, great lord. His hair is natural. Where he comes from, it's as common as red or black hair.
Great lord! Rachel, did you hear? The red hair is... Oh, I like her, like her, like her.
At that moment, as quick and neat as ever, JB came into the room, glanced up at where the lord and lady of the manor stood, and folded himself into a bow so deep it held the taint of parody. Fortunately, neither of the Cotters seemed aware of that.
John Barrymore Dix from Cripple Creek in the Rockies. A man with a great skill with all blasters and weapons.
Could use him, Rachel. Lots of blasters going home, sweet home on the range. Need a good band to put them together again.
Now that we've seen you, you can eat with us. And you can all tell us more about yourselves. Then we can decide whether you... what happens to you.
There was a third person behind the ornate pillars of the balcony, indistinct and shadowy, with a pale round blur of a face. The clothes were as dark as Rachel Carter's, with what looked like a chain of gold around the neck. It held a single large amethyst, cut so that its facets reflected bolts of violet light across the room. As quickly as he appeared, the person vanished, moving with a gentle ease, not making a sound. Ryan looked again at the space where he'd been, doubting his own sight. But he noticed that Christy had also seen him. She mouthed the single word, Jabez, to Ryan. Suddenly, the audience with the rulers of Front Royal was over. Rachel had begun to show signs of a strange unease. Her hands fluttered around her mouth like startled birds, and she rubbed at her lips, chafing the skin of her cheeks. She told Ryan and the others that they should wait for the Sekhmen, who were posted at each corner of the large hall, to take them to their quarters for the night.
We eat at 6 in the evening. Don't leave your rooms or you'll be killed on the spot.
Ryan watched them go, his brother shuffling haltingly like a mountain of blubber after his wife. One thing was sure, Lady Rachel Carter wasn't someone to screw around with. Locked away.